Lloyd with Morgan streaking. She's checking the goalkeeper.
The pay disparity between the men and women is just too large, and we want to continue to fight. The generation of players before us fought, and now it's our job to keep on fighting.
The pay cap for the women's Major League Soccer players is 11 times less than the pay cap for men's Major League Soccer. 11 times.
Rapinoe gets a crossing. It's towards Wolfman.
You're listening to Give and Go with Rotas Wadera, only on Girls Soccer Network.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 70 of Give and Go. I'm your host, Rotas Wadera, and thank you so much for making the choice to listen to us at Girls Soccer Network. For all the latest and greatest from the world of women's soccer, you can go to www.girlsoccernetwork.com. You can check us out on Instagram at Girls Soccer Network or on Twitter at Girls Soccer Net. If you'd like to give me a follow, you can check me out on Instagram at RowinDatas25, RowinDatas25. If you follow me, I promise I will give you a follow back. It honestly, nothing bothers me more than when some other account like comes in and likes your posts and then wants you to follow them, full well knowing they're not going to follow you back. So like I get you guys. I will follow you back. All right? Episode 70, we have so much special stuff coming for you. Specifically, Julie Ehrman, the owner of Angel City. Man, this is a great interview. You're not going to want to miss that. We get into a lot of stuff of her background, how she got into what she is doing, along with some other things that have occurred during her tenure as the owner of Angel City. But again, it was a great conversation, and we're super grateful for the opportunity to speak with someone like Julie Ehrman. And again, this is from the convention, so you might hear a little bit of background noise, right? But that is coming up soon. First, we have to start at the top. We will get to the Gold Cup, Mexico stunning the United States for the second time in their history. Major transfer news that's out. There's the lawsuit that the Canadian women's national team filed against the Canadian Federation. There's so much that we have to discuss today. But first, like I mentioned, the United States lost to Mexico 2-0 for the second time ever. I believe the United States record was 40 wins, 1 loss, and 2 draws all time. And it had been an 8-year run where the United States had not lost in an official CONCACAF competition on U.S. soil. So you want to talk about a historic win? It was something incredible. It was honestly the perfect storm, and I just put out a piece that's up on Girls Soccer Network today that kind of goes into detail about it, but I will give you the recap here as well because I was there. I willingly sat through 2 hours of traffic, left my place at 3 p.m., got there at 5, was able to catch the end of that first game between Argentina and the Dominican Republic. It was nice. Argentina easily defeated the Dominican Republic 3-0. There were some fans out there. It was nice to check out Dignity Health Sports Park and see where the Galaxy play. Again, I am an Angel City fan, so I can't be complimenting them too much, but it was a great experience. And what was so interesting about it was that it was truly a 50-50 game. It was not home field advantage for the United States at all in this one. The Mexican fans came out in heavy, heavy support. As we know, the Mexican influence and culture in Los Angeles is historic. It goes back centuries. And so when you see the centuries and centuries worth of history come up, anytime the United States and Mexico play, it's going to be a big game. It's going to be a spectacle. It's going to be an event. And that is exactly what it was. We talked about the perfect storm earlier. That is exactly what this was. Mexico's best ever team versus a United States team that has not been performing all that well. And you add into the fact that it was Mexico's fans that were giving their players the boost that they needed. And there weren't enough United States fans in the audience to give them the lift they needed when their backs were up against the wall and things really got tough. From the United States perspective, Rose Lavelle was the only one who really looked likely to do anything for the United States in that game. Trinity Rodman had a chance she missed in the second half that seemed like it would be the equalizer. But outside of that, Mexico created more chances, had more shots, and shots on goal. So they literally outplayed the United States. My jaw was on the floor the entire time watching this game, guys. I swear, I could not believe what was happening before my very eyes. First, you have the mistake from Becky Sauerbrunn, and I think it's naturally going to raise questions. What is the point of putting out the lineup that you put out if Naomi Girma is not going to be in it? And why are we, I guess it's Becky, this is probably Becky's last hurrah. So maybe it was a request from her. We're not there. I'm purely speculating. It could be anything. But I guess they want to give her this in a competition that seemed like it would be lower. There would be less pressure. But that was not the case against Mexico, who pressed the United States. Of course, they're going to make it physical. Of course, they're going to knock the United States on their butts a few times and really make them feel this game. It was a chippy game. It was an intense game. And the way the Mexicans played, it was absolutely incredible. What an incredible performance. They did everything that they needed to do perfectly. So going back to the mistake, Becky Sauerbrunn gives it up. Mexico scores, takes advantage on both goals. I mean, the second one was an absolute stunner to end the game. And I mean, what an exclamation point. There were plenty of controversies within it. The ref probably ended the game a few minutes too soon, which was interesting, but it was still 2-0. Of course, it's never over till it's over. You never know. But that was a big gripe from a lot of fans after the match. Why did we not play the full 5 minutes? Which I thought was, again, yeah, that wasn't right. To say that there were missed calls and things like that, I don't know if there were that many missed calls. I thought the ref did a good enough job considering the gravity of the moment. Maybe there could have been a different referee, but for that game, I felt like she did just a good enough of a job. There were some there were some interesting challenges and some shots here and there, but it didn't look like there was VAR involved, because otherwise then VAR would have stepped in and made a call, but there was obviously nothing enough there. So honestly, just to be a part of something like that, even though being a United States fan, seeing the looks on everyone's faces, seeing the families, and just what the win meant, and just how emotional it was and how happy everyone was in Los Angeles, knowing how important Mexican culture is in order to tell the history of LA, you can't tell it without the people of Mexico. Like, and how the two countries and the two cities are forever interrelated. I mean, Los Angeles is literally the city of angels. It literally is Spanish. So it's like you can't, it makes it so special to watch and see a game like that. It was something special. And moving forward now, the United States still have a lot of work to do, of course. They're still going into the quarterfinal. They're still through, so there's nothing happening from them losing, but they're going to have to take a look and reassess, really have to figure some things out, because that team, with that effort that they put out, it was not it. They were out of sync. There was one point during the game when they were trailing, and there was a stoppage in play, and the whole team huddled up, and the body language did not look good from the stands. It looked like there was a little bit of a... And look, okay, if you're calling each other out and asking to pick the standards up, that's great, okay? Those are naturally going to be uncomfortable conversations. But it didn't seem like it was... The message was being very well received. It looked like Rose and Lindsey Horan were really trying to lead the conversation and trying to do the best they can to get this team back on track. Unfortunately, Lindsey Horan didn't have her best game. She's been phenomenal, okay? She is an incredible player, but she just didn't have her best game on the night. Alex Morgan came in on the second half, didn't do too much. Sophia Smith barely had an impact. Lynn Williams didn't even touch the ball. Midge Purse came in, barely touched the ball. So there's so many things that the United States still has to work on. Emma Hayes has got some work to do when she gets here. So it'll be fun to see how the rest of this competition plays out. Again, the United States are in the quarterfinal, but who they will play remains to be seen. Okay, probably by the time this episode comes out, you'll probably have a good sense of who the United States is going to be playing in the quarterfinal. And it's likely going to be a tougher matchup than they would have hoped for, because you're probably going to have to take on a group winner now rather than the runner-up team in the quarterfinals. So a matchup against Brazil or Canada, you never quite know who it's going to be in the quarterfinals. So they're going to have a much tougher matchup than they would have hoped for because of this loss to Mexico. Still, an incredible result. Super happy to be there. What a night it was in Carson, California. All right, as promised, the Julie Ehrman interview is here, guys. The owner of Angel City FC. Enjoy. We are with Julie Ehrman, the founder of Angel City. Julie, how are you doing and how are you enjoying the convention?
I'm great. This is my first convention. It was my first NWSL draft in person, and you really feel the enthusiasm of these young girls wanting to join the NWSL and how large this community is around football and specifically women's football.
So how are you guys feeling about the draft and what do you guys have planned for free agency?
We crushed it. We are going much further in the playoffs this year. We were looking for very specific individuals to add depth to our team. We got three incredible players. We even traded for a position to pick up a third player, which was really exciting to see. But it's really building on our chemistry. It's building where we left off last year, which is a ton of grit, a ton of fight, teamwork, and a real goal that we can do more. We can go further.
Last year was obviously a wild ride of a season. Talk us through how difficult of a decision it was to have to replace Freya Coombe with Becky Tweed and essentially turning the season around in the way that you guys did.
Yeah, it was a really difficult decision. I give all the credit to Angela Huclis-Magana for making that hard decision. And she was very thoughtful and very intentional and took her time to make sure it was right, talking to the key stakeholders. Freya is an incredible coach, a more incredible person who I feel so fortunate to call a friend. So the emotional non-soccer side was very difficult, and I will forever be grateful to her for reminding me that it's just football and this is what happens, even though I was fairly devastated. But to see the support of the players for Becky, the confidence that she had, the intentionality that she changed our practice environment and even our playing style, the results, you know, really speak for themselves.
What was it like to witness 5-1 to end the season last year, a historic moment? When this is your baby, your brainchild, talk us through what it felt like for you to be able to witness such an incredible moment for Angel City.
Yeah, let me take you back. So we needed to win that game to make the playoffs. We also needed some other teams to sort of win or lose. And walking into that game, I said, look, the NWSL is unpredictable. It is the most competitive league in the world. Those teams are going to do what they need to do to put us in the position. So all we need to do is win. And coming out of halftime up 2-0 was just sort of hard to get my head around. And then Savvy scored right away. Then you have the bicycle kick. Then they come back for one. And there wasn't much time left. But in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if we're going to hold it. And then everybody's trying to tell me what's happening now, the other games, which I didn't want to know about because I just wanted to focus. But it wasn't until the whistle blew and I recognized the score was 5-1 that I actually exhaled with a ton of tears and believed that we actually won the game. And then to find out that we actually had to make it into the playoffs through goal differential, that the universe of the NWSL did not provide us the wins and losses that we needed, that we truly needed goal differential. And a team that historically does not score a lot of goals actually got in through goal differential just made it so much sweeter.
What would you say was the aha moment for you that kind of gave you the idea to start this?
So I was brought in by Karen Nortman and Natalie Portman, my two co-founders. You know, for me, it was really an education process. I didn't come from women's football. I didn't come from sports. My background is media and entertainment, mostly in the gaming space. So I had to educate myself about the global world of football, looking at who the best of the best were, how they became the best, and how I can both replicate that and grow that and make it authentic to the community of Los Angeles. I think I had a number of aha moments. It was when She Believes came to Los Angeles and they sold 12,000, 15,000 seats at Dignity Park for the Galaxy. So it showed me that this community would show up for women's football. Talking to Eva Longoria, who said, I believe in your mission and your vision, and I'm going to write you a very large check. Talking to Mia Hamm, and actually having her initial concerns that I knew what to go and address to make sure we would be successful. But I think the first aha moment with the fans was on July 1st in 2021 when we revealed our crest and our colors. We had an event down at BMO Stadium and about 4,000 fans showed up. And it was like, oh my God, they're here. It's going to happen. And then, you know, the home opener, our goal was just to sell it out. And walking the fan fest 3 hours before the match with 4,000 or 5,000 fans, it was so clear that Los Angeles wanted a women's football club and we were doing something special to create a space for people to come together to celebrate it.
Now, there was a moment earlier this season against the Washington Spirit, situation with the officials. I'll put it this way. Do you feel like you got your money's worth that day when you got fined?
I think that was a lesson learned. I think there's moments when my emotions get the best of me. In hindsight, I'm not actually sure what I was trying to accomplish. I think I had visions of Mark Cuban and other people acting that way, which sort of gave me permission to. But I am embarrassed by my actions. The referees work incredibly hard. This is football. Sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. But it was a good lesson learned. And another example of just trying to control. I care so much. Like, I'm a fan, right? So sometimes it's hard to separate the fan from the owner. And that was just a moment in time where I have to do better.
Now, when this project first began, I noticed that a lot of people were quick to point out your previous endeavors, some of the things that went down, and they were so quick to kind of push this narrative against you. I think it's safe to say, though, you got the last laugh. What message do you have to all those people out there who doubted you?
Yeah, look, people always want to put other people down, especially if they're threatening by them. The hardest thing is actually trying. So maybe you view it as a failure, but then I ask, have you ever tried to do something like that? You know, with my previous company, Ouya, which was an Android-based video game console, we took on Apple, Nintendo, Google, Microsoft, Sony. How many people would even embark on such a journey, let alone raise $8.6 million from Kickstarter from 63,000 backers, let alone do two rounds of financing, ultimately selling the team to Razer, where my entire staff was able to stay on and continue to build Ouya. So I think my definition of failure and theirs is very different. But what I would tell everyone is stop focusing on what others can and can't do and focus on what you want to accomplish. And the reality is, every failure is an opportunity for growth. And to your point, that just gave me the tough skin to build Angel City, where we received 100 no's, where people told us we could not build a women's professional soccer team in the sports capital of the world, you know, in the backyard of 11 professional sports teams in the beach in the mountains. You know, so I get to say, yes, we can.
What is your advice to all the women out there who want a dream as big as you have?
The only person that can limit yourself is you. Craft your story, tell your narrative, find the right people to tell it to. And if people believe in your passion and they follow you, you'll be able to achieve your dreams.
Again, that was Julie Ehrman, the owner of Angel City FC. And honestly, I wasn't sure what was going to happen when I asked her about the incident on the sidelines where she confronted referees. But honestly, I think Julie, credit to her, just took full responsibility and said, I cannot act that way. And in spite of, hey, look, we all want to win. We're all competitors. And when it's your baby and it's a team that you own, right? Like Mark Cuban for the Mavs is at every game courtside looking on and watching every game. So it's like, of course, you know, these things are going to happen from time to time. I think she's learned from that. And as she mentioned, really just learning from that and then building upon it. I mean, and you're able to see kind of what she's been able to build along with the rest of the investment group and everyone involved. What they've been able to build is something incredibly special. And going into year three, and you see some of the signings that Angel City have made and added and the community that is around this team, you're going to start to see even more improvement. I think the only last piece to the puzzle is, can we get Kristen Pressback, and will it be soon? And how soon will that be? It's obviously a tough situation because you know how hard Kristen Press has been trying to come back and how badly she wants to come back. And like, but it's just like when you have that many knee surgeries, it can catch up to you. The rehab process becomes harder and harder with each time that you go through it. And that's, I've not had knee injuries, but from having seen and watched sports many a times, a lot of times after that first, second, third injury, the player is not the same. It takes an even more dedication, even more effort, even more discipline to try and get back to the level that you were at. So fingers crossed, prayers up for Kristen Press. We are hoping that everything is okay with her and that she will be able to come back soon, because she's one of the missing pieces for this team in attack. And if she's there, right, to go with all the young pieces that we have right now, Angel City has a great opportunity to be a contender. Adding Rocky Rodriguez, again, was one of the better moves of the offseason that has kind of gone under the radar. So it's going to be fun to see Rocky. And we're a few weeks away. The opener, Angel City versus Bay FC, March 17th now, not the 16th. It's been moved to Sunday. It's going to be a great one. We got tickets. We will be there. We will let you know everything about it, what it was like to be in the stadium. So be sure to stay tuned for that one. Speaking of which, we get into some of the latest transfer moves from the World of Women's Soccer, and Bay FC continues to say, hey, we are not going to play it safe. We are all in. And they just went out and got Zambian forward Rachel Kundananji for a record fee, $789,000 from Madrid CFF. And man, it is an incredible thing to see the world record fee continually get shattered week after week. I know this $789,000 might not seem like a lot now. Soon, it's only a matter of time before that number becomes $1 million for a transfer fee. Then the fee becomes $2 million. Then three, then four. And then before you know it, the numbers are going to start to align with what the men have. Like, this is how you know, guys. This is the barometer here to knowing how big women's soccer is. It's all in the transfer fees. The bigger the transfer fee, the bigger they get, the better off women's soccer is going to be. Because that just tells you, all right, a team is willing. First of all, the fact that they have enough money to do it, right? That means that the league is starting to get more money. If they can get more money into the league, right, then they're willing to pay this much for the services of a player, that'll continue to dictate the market, and the values of these players are only going to climb higher and higher and higher. And then on top of that, she's an incredible player. So the fact that Bay FC essentially decided we're going to bring that African influence back to the NWSL, I always go back to Linda Mofalo and Thembi Kgatlana when the South Africans came and played for the Houston Dash, what it meant for the league. And then you add even two even bigger stars in Kundananji and Asisa Oshoala. This is going to be one of the biggest seasons in... Guys, I cannot tell you how big this year is going to be. This season is going to be incredible. You do not want to miss out on this season. All right? I'm telling you, however it goes, what Bay FC has done is that they have changed the game, going and getting players that never would have come. It seemed incomprehensible to me that Asisa Oshoala would ever sign and come to America. But both her and Kundananji were obviously swayed by the pitch that Bay FC had, that they get to be at the start of something from the beginning. You know, to be on something from the ground floor and build it. And I think that was the thing. That type of challenge was what drew those two great players. Because if you're Oshoala, like, what are you doing over at Barcelona? You're just winning game after game. There's not much of a, really that much of a challenge until you get to the Champions League knockout stages. Really, realistically, there's not really anyone in Liga F that can contend with them. They had that insane winning streak where they pretty much never lost. So it was time, and it's really just showing that women's soccer has truly, truly arrived. We're here now, and we're hopefully here to stay. Another big move within the NWSL. Might have mentioned it already, but CeCe Kaiser going to Houston when she'd wanted to stay closer to home. With the Kansas City Current, she's from Kansas. Seemed like it was a great situation. She was doing well for Kansas City, and then boom, traded for Nichelle Prince to Houston. And so if you're Houston, you've added CeCe Kaiser, and you've got Yuki Nagasato as well to go with Maria Sanchez and Diana Ordonez. So if Yuki Nagasato can do what she did in Chicago, which is provide, you know, going back to the olden days when Yuki and Sam Kerr were playing, and then Yuki and a little bit of Mallory Pugh as well, her ability to unlock a defense and pass and distribute is one of her greatest strengths, and that's probably one of the biggest things that Houston was missing. I think you can see Maria Sanchez create and do everything, but it's too much for one player. Diana Ordonez needs the service, and CeCe Kaiser, like, who knows, what if they go to a two-striker format now and have Kaiser and Ordonez play off of each other? So they have options in Houston with Yuki Nagasato there now to go with Sanchez, to give Sanchez a little bit of help in creation. Last year's issue was not defense for Houston, it was offense. And you add a player like Yuki, yes, she is slightly older, but that's not to say she still can't do it in this league. And her movement and her passing is still elite. So it's a great move for Houston. We're going to see between Kaiser and Nagasato how things pan out for Houston this year. They're kind of flying under the radar. I don't think enough people are talking about them and what they've done recently. So keep an eye on the Dash this year as well. You know, as we get closer to the season, I think what we're going to do is we'll do an NWSL preview. We'll give kind of where we feel the teams may end up in the standings. It might seem like an impossible task, but we're going to give it a shot. One last transfer move before we move to the Canada lawsuit, which was, again, a huge news. Lena Oberdorf, again, another signing happened about a week ago. 22-year-old, arguably the best young, one of the best young players in the world, and probably Germany's best player, or soon-to-be best player. Just moved from Wolfsburg to Bayern Munich. And that, again, is a huge, huge deal, because Bayern Munich is really trying to play catch-up. They've had one of the most storied programs on the men's side for a long, long time. But it obviously took them a while to really enter the women's space and say, hey, we got to be serious about this, because it's been Wolfsburg's league. Wolfsburg have been the team on the women's side that have absolutely dominated. But now you're starting to see Bayern Munich spend the money. And for them to go get Lena Oberdorf, who is arguably their best player, and adding her to Bayern, that is just a big, big deal for the league. And I guess Wolfsburg, they're more of a team that develops the young talent and through the academies, and they scout well, and they don't necessarily have the money that Bayern Munich has, and so they have to find ways to get creative and do it in a different way. I think Wolfsburg, maybe they're worried, maybe they're not. I think they still feel comfortable in the group that they have, but Oberdorf is a big player. And you just let him go to your rival for whatever fee. And then Wolfsburg must be supremely confident in what they're doing, because Oberdorf is one of the best. Like, she's 22 and has already played in major competitions, starred as a defensive midfielder, as a consensus top 30 to top 20, top 15 player in the world, man. How do you just let her go like that? It will boggle my mind. Okay, maybe Oberdorf wanted the move. Fine. That doesn't, like, I love how great women's soccer is in terms of, okay, teams are requesting or accepting the players' requests if they want to go somewhere or whatnot. But at some point, some teams, like, for the benefit of your own success, you do have to put your foot down and say no sometimes. I think this is one of those cases. How can you let a player of Lena Oberdorf's quality walk out? Yes, they got a nice fee for it, closer to Kundinanji's fee, but that's a player that's going to be worth more than the fee that she is in a few years. That's a $1 million transfer fee type of player in Oberdorf. So that was an absolute shocker to me. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Bundesliga plays out in terms of a power shift moving forward. You could start to see one as Bayern Munich continues to build, continues to spend money. I hope it's not the case. Wolfsburg is one of my favorite teams to watch, and I hope that they maintain their spot at the top, if they can. We shall see. All right. The Canadian national team, the women's national team, sued Canadian soccer for more than $40 million for financial negligence. Now, again, there's a big backstory with this. This has been ongoing since 2021. The women's national team threatened to strike at the She Believes Cup in 2023. You might remember that, as they tried to advocate for equal pay. Canada's total sponsorship deals are estimated to be worth $15 to $20 million annually, but the filing alleges Canada Soccer only received the previously agreed upon annual fee of $3.5 million. How is that anywhere close to what the fee was? But I think the biggest thing was really just the way in which they handled this whole situation. The whole deal that they signed was absolutely ridiculous. And naturally, the Canadian national team is getting what is owed to them. And I think for me, the biggest thing about this is, like, they deserve this money because they've been Canada's best team for the longest time, to where the Canadian men have never come anywhere close. Up until this last World Cup, the Canadian men had never come anywhere close to achieving what the Canadian women have achieved, and still have not. So for me, when the results speak for themselves, right, and you have the number of stars that you have on that Canadian team, and you have that, like, the Canadian domestic men's league, I wouldn't be able to name one team or one player for you, but I can name all the Canadian women's national team players. That's the difference. And that's why they deserve this money. So good for them. I hope they get this money. They deserve it because the Canadian Soccer Federation has been screwing them over for 3-4 years at a stretch, and it's time for it to end. So hopefully it does. Switching gears a little bit, some big news out of the Women's Super League. They're expected to award new TV rights to the BBC, Sky, TNT Sports, and DAZN. A new broadcast schedule could include Friday and Saturday night games to boost ratings and increase revenue. The WSL is hoping for a significant increase in revenue as a result of the negotiations for the new TV rights. So, again, you put these players in prime time when everyone's watching, and it'll hopefully increase some of the interest around the game. And, of course, that's what they've been doing for the Premier League on the men's side for many, 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 many years, and it's about time that the women got the same. So it's going to be great. I think you're going to see Chelsea, Arsenal, all the big clubs get a lot of those Friday and Saturday night games to be able to see the stars like a Chloe Kelly, like a Lauren James, all the great players that England has. You're going to get to see them. Vivienne Miedema, not just England, but the whole league in general. Bunny Shaw, there's so many great players that deserve to be given the spotlight in prime time. And hopefully this deal will be the beginning of that. It's not finalized yet, but when it is, man, again, just another step in the right direction, another sign that women's soccer is growing. Two more items of note before we wrap up this episode. First, it's really great to see a lot of American college soccer stars go to play in Europe. It's important, again, for the development. If the Americans want to keep up, we need to develop players, not just in the NWSL, but all around the world. Eva Gaetino signed with PSG. That was a big deal. She withdrew her name from the draft and immediately signed, which makes sense. She's teaming up with Corbin Albert. Eleanor Dale and Julia Elias were both drafted, but they both went and signed in Europe. Julia Elias signed with Vitesse GK in Sweden, and Eleanor Dale, one of the better goal scorers in all of college soccer last year, went to Everton to be in the FAWSL. So really, really exciting stuff here. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch some of these young players really grow and blossom into future stars. Last but not least, I got to give a quick shout out to my buddy Haro, who has created a app for you guys to check out. It is called The Women's Game. It is the first women's soccer app strictly for that. You can filter based off of your favorite teams, and based on those teams, you will get a news feed with videos and a lot of different information. Plus, you can click on articles and get a quick synopsis or summary really quickly. So if you don't have time to read the whole article, you can get a summary as well. So I mean, this app is really, really awesome. Go check it out. It's The Women's Game, and I highly recommend checking out this app, guys. It's really, really awesome. And that is all that we have for you guys today on episode 70 of Give and Go. I'm your host, Rotas Wadera, and thank you so much again for making the choice to listen to us at Girls Soccer Network. Again, if you want to give us a follow on Instagram, it is at Girls Soccer Network, on Twitter at Girls Soccer Net, and of course www.girlssoccernetwork.com is where all of the latest and greatest content is. And of course, if you want to give me a follow, check me out on Instagram at rowindatis25. Give me a follow. I will follow you back. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Man, blessed for 70 episodes. Honestly, I can't even believe it's been 70 episodes, but we're here and we're still going. So again, we appreciate you all, and we will continue on this journey. Peace out, y'all.